This is a true crime in real-time roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We dive into true crime reports from Odyssey stations across the country. This week, we're going to focus on updates to two cases that have captured the public's attention in recent weeks: the Jeffrey Epstein files and the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. In both cases, sifting fact from fiction can be difficult, as online sleuths share theories all over social media. But before we get into those cases, we'll first cover some crimes that you might have missed. The first was reported by KRLD in Dallas.
Scuba instructor busted after a drowning of a girl in Kaufman County.
12-year-old Dylan Harrison was getting her scuba certification at the scuba ranch in Terrell in August of last year when she went under and never resurfaced. Her body was later found away from the platform at a depth of about 45 feet, according to the family's attorney. Now her instructor, William Armstrong, has been arrested and charged with injury to a child. Harrison's family is also suing two major scuba agencies, alleging systemic safety failure led to their daughter's drowning. They also claim Armstrong was out of the water and bone dry as they began searching for Dylan. Armstrong has been permanently suspended from teaching classes at the scuba ranch. He also resigned from his position with the Collin County Sheriff's Office back in October.
Another crime to keep an ear out for was reported out of WWJ News Radio in Detroit.
A woman's body was found kind of wrapped up in a sheet near 7 Mile and Woodward. This discovery was made last night around 6 o'clock. Detroit police say they were on routine patrol at the intersection of Hershey and Annan. That's in the Palmer Park area. They spotted an unresponsive body, kind of, again, wrapped up in a package, but in the middle of the street. Now, homicide is conducting the investigation, but so far, no reason given for why that body was found or the circumstances surrounding this incident.
Now, an update into the Nancy Guthrie disappearance case. Nancy, the mother of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie, disappeared on February 1st, just as her daughter was planning to go to Italy to cover the Olympics. As I record this, we're entering the third week of the 84-year-old going missing from her Tucson-area home. In that time, there's been a flurry of ransom notes, some believed to be real and others hoaxes. A man has even been charged for one of those alleged hoaxes. Another man was detained for the believed kidnapping and then released. Savannah Guthrie and her family have shared videos on social media, including one in which they said they would pay a ransom. One of the biggest developments in the case this week was the FBI's release of doorbell camera footage of a suspect in the case. However, that footage has brought more questions than answers. There's also the matter of DNA evidence found at Nancy Guthrie's home, as well as gloves that have become part of the case. Still, as of Friday evening, the search for her continued. This Wednesday, retired FBI agent James Gagliano, who is working for Fox News covering the Guthrie case, joined Odyssey station WCCO News Talk's Chad Hartman from Arizona to discuss the investigation.
From being on the scene, compared to viewing this from afar, what has stood out most to you?
Well, Chad, first of all, good to join you, and always make time for you and your listeners. And if we have any problems here with the cell coverage, I am, as you pointed out, in the Catalina foothills and just almost directly across the street from Nancy Guthrie's house. This story has been baffling from the start. And Chad, it's one of the weirdest things. It is a multi-jurisdictional complex investigation. And with those comes ebbs and flows and fits and starts. But a lot of the pieces in this one just haven't made a lot of sense. And I'll close by saying, I thought, and I'm stating the obvious here, but I thought yesterday the release of the video images and the stills of the perpetrator who disabled the Nest doorbell, the camera, the motion detected camera, at Nancy Guthrie's house, was just an incredible bit of detective work. And I'll say this, it was the collaboration of the 10-pound brain scientists and special agents at the Operational Technology Division for the FBI, collaborating with the private sector. In this instance, Google, the parent company, decided to help out. And Chad, these ringer, it's not a Ring doorbell, it's Nest. But the way they work, if you don't have a subscription for them, they wipe out whatever has been videoed every 3 or 4 hours. They were able to go back into this when it ended up into this dump, this deletion dump of millions and millions, and just call it metadata. And they were able to plumb this out of that wasteland, the depths of that wasteland, and to do it in 10, 11 days, absolutely stunning and outstanding work by our law enforcement, Chad.
Yeah, when it first came out, Jimmy, and I echo those words now that I know what was going on, I was trying to understand why it took so long, but you laid it out precisely, and that is great work. Okay, now, as someone with your experience, when you saw that video, and thankfully all these smart minds were able to come together and provide us with this video, as someone who's been involved in stories like this before, what stood out most to you about this individual who arrived at Nancy Guthrie's house?
Well, you know, Chad, the days of Jack the Ripper in the late 19th century, who was a guy who killed all these young prostitutes and the case has never been solved, the days of that are over. Police sciences and methodologies have evolved to a point where there simply exist no more perfect crimes. I'm going to go on record here and I'm going to say the FBI, the Pima County Sheriff's Office, all the law enforcement partners, they are going to solve this crime. Now, we trust that it's a release or a rescue and not a recovery, but they will solve this crime. It is just taking time. Now, in regards to the video that you're talking about, a number of quick points, if you'll allow for me.
Sure.
From the video, and with technology today, we have the ability to go and to use 3D modeling, and we can get the height of this person within a half a centimeter. The weight of this person, we can gather that. The shoe size, and it's as simple as this. When the perp, and everybody has seen it, the video in black and white, if you're crossing over into the portico, which is that curved archway on all the homes in this area, the size of an American brick, made an American brick foundry here, is 2 2¼ inches. So there are ways that detectives have gone through, already mapped all that, figured out his size. Now, they always think they're smarter than we are. You know, the fact that there was a mask on his face. But, you know, to think that a professional person doing this, a professional criminal, it boggles the mind that would not have had a plan to go up and obscure or obstruct the Nest doorbell that took the video, that literally had to reach down, pick up a piece of native to the southwestern part of the United States, sagebrush, and put it in front of the camera to block it. So that amount of bumbling and fumbling, and yet we still have a case that's 11 days old and we don't know where she is.
Okay, so they know this, they see this, and this is not someone who, to your trained eye, looks like a professional in this area, where has, I hate to say this, but criminal polish about him. How in any way does that change their path of an investigation?
Well, again, it goes back to this. I mean, this person went to the extent of wearing rubber gloves, wearing a ski mask. You know, there are certain physical immutable characteristics that human beings have, and one of them is the distance between our eyes and the bridge of their nose. So in this instance, the only exposed skin that is available is the distance between the eyes, of course, and a portion of the nose. So that is something, again, that investigators are going to be looking into. And as of this morning, Chad, the FBI had received 10,000 tips to the tip line. Now, the vast majority of those are going to go nowhere. But as we always tell people, when you and I have talked about, you know, tragic events, crisis across the years, if you see something, say something. And I'll say one other thing. I've heard all this discussion, too, about gait analysis. That's something new. You might have heard about it.
Yeah,
people talking
right.
about the D.C. pipe bomber case. That's certainly something, you know, I don't know if there's a science to that as much as it is. Somebody's watching this and goes, oh my gosh, that little hitch in the step, that's Uncle Mike. Or, oh my gosh, I recognize that build or those eyes. And to your point at the top of this, yesterday, late last night, there was an investigative detention of an individual in Rio Rico, which is about 60 miles south of where I'm standing right now on the Mexican border. So it's just across the Mexican border from Nogales. Now, when the FBI and Pima County Sheriff's Office were working this, they had reasonable suspicion to stop this individual and conduct a brief investigative detention, which means there was reasonable suspicion that he might have been involved. At the same time, they executed a search warrant, which is the next level of requirement as we go up, you know, go up the continuum in the law. It requires a court order, and they entered the house where this individual lived, ostensibly to look for things that were at the crime scene or clothing that could have possibly been worn. They ended up turning the house back over to the inhabitants, releasing this guy after a couple of hours. So people are like, well, Jimmy, look at that. Keystone Cops, there's a dead end.
Right.
You're back at square run. Not the way it works. There are tons of leads being worked concurrently. And just because you get one dead end, that erases somebody from it, but it does not stop the investigation.
Okay, Jimmy, I want to go back to these 10,000 leads and, you know, the TMZ and this person. I've got some information. Just give me Bitcoin and the validity of, ransom notes. And the sad thing is some of these folks are evil. They're trying to take advantage of an 84-year-old woman who is gone. Others might be providing legitimate information when there's so much volume. How do these folks who feel like they're battling the clock constantly, how do they try to determine the credibility of any of these folks and the quick dismissal of others who just have evil in their heart, and that's why they're participating in some nefarious way?
Well, I mean, it's a similar to 9/11 in the World Trade Center case that I worked as a young FBI agent. Chad, thousands upon thousands upon tens of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of leads came in. What happens? Well, really quick, you know, to kind of, you know, demystify this for your listeners, there's a leads management team, and they work out of what's called a tactical operations center. The FBI has brought that in. I believe it's either in Phoenix, there's one, and then there's one down in Tucson, which is a resident agency or a satellite agency out of the FBI's Phoenix division, which covers the state of Arizona. You have scores and scores and scores of FBI investigators that are going through those and conducting the same thing that doctors do and nurses do. They're doing a triage. They're determining this is high priority, this is low priority, this is no priority. And that's how it gets work. So it is manpower intensive. And then every time you do get a lead that is of medium priority or high priority, you're then, because you're working this jointly, remember, Chad, the FBI does not have the lead in this case, because this is there's no such thing as a simple kidnapping, but because we haven't proved any intrastate transportation of a hostage, and because it doesn't involve a child younger than 12, the FBI doesn't have automatic purview, and because
Let me ask you this, Jimmy. Can I jump in?
Should they? 100%. And I have great respect and affinity for law enforcement across this nation. The FBI can't do anything without local law enforcement. I'll say that in full stop. In this instance, and I'll say this, Chad, as a recovering politician, you have an elected sheriff. And I'm not going to suggest or go out on a limb here and say, well, every elected sheriff, because they are elected, are politicians, and they're making these decisions predicated on politics. But in this instance, this case should have been handed over to the FBI and worked hand in glove with the FBI. And I'll tell you this, Chad, because I'm here and because I have my ear to the ground and I have sources and I talk to people. For the first 2 days of this investigation, let's just say that there wasn't a close, cozy relationship between the feds and the Pima County Sheriff's Office. That's not casting shade. That's not tossing stones. But it took a while for the FBI to be brought into this fully. Now, again, we did not have purview. We can't come in as the 500-pound gorilla and say, this is ours. However, There is not a law enforcement agency in the world with the resources and the depth and breadth of knowledge and skills that the FBI has. We always hear about the bad things and the mistakes and the fumbles. But trust me when I say this, for 117 years, they have done amazing work. And in this case, our scientists, our special agents, being able to pull that video out of a disabled doorbell camera and put it out there, that is going to be, in my estimation, the margin of victory in solving this case.
Last thing, and again, I thank you so much for joining us. You can imagine we're getting a number of texts because of your response, because of your credibility. And a lot of people are wondering about the speculation involving Ann Guthrie, also a daughter of Nancy, and the suspicion about the husband and all the activity at their house. What is your read on that part of the story so far?
So I always say this. So kidnappings happen for one of two reasons, Chad. They're either for revenge or for profit. Those are the two reasons. And I worked them south of the border in Mexico for 2 years when I was a legal attaché, and I've worked a number of them in the lower 48. Here's the thing on this. The people with intimate relationships with somebody who has disappeared or has become the victim of violence are always top of the list of suspects. But you can't go down a rabbit hole. You've got to keep a wide aperture, and you've got to follow the evidence where it goes. The FBI is certainly not going to say, this is our person, without having the evidence to back it up. I have not heard anything internally that they have settled on a family member on this. And I know the online sleuths, and there are a lot of them, have already made these decisions. It's a female, you can tell. It's a family member. I don't have all the information. I'm certainly not at the Tactical Operations Center, and I'm certainly not talking to the director of the FBI. But I'm saying, of course, they are considered people of interest, because everyone is until you rule them out. But they are not currently suspects.
Odyssey station WBEN out of Buffalo, New York, also consulted experts on the Guthrie case this Thursday.
Investigators discovering a black glove near the home of Nancy Guthrie as the search for the mother of Today Show host Savannah Guthrie continues. Jonathan Hunt has the latest from Tucson.
The discovery of that glove is potentially, and I emphasize the word potentially, a key development. They were found not too far from Nancy Guthrie's home, about a mile and a half, as we understand it, as investigators went through the roadways there and the shrubbery just off of those roadways. Now, those gloves do resemble the ones being worn by whomever was breaking into Nancy Guthrie's home on that doorbell camera on the morning of Sunday, February the 1st. But a note of caution here, those gloves also resemble in some ways the kind of gloves that are worn by investigators themselves. It is possible that a pair of those gloves could have fallen out the back pocket of an investigator.
Now, authorities briefly detained a man for questioning Tuesday night in connection with the case following a traffic stop. He was later released.
The ability of law enforcement to be able to obtain that footage from a doorbell camera that wasn't subscribed to a recording service at the time, drawing some new questions. WBEN's Tom Puckett has more.
Retired Buffalo Police Captain Jeff Rinaldo says when it comes to accessing doorbell camera footage, he says there are two ways law enforcement can get it.
Number one, somebody willingly turns the video footage over to law enforcement. Number two, if they're not willing to do that, or in this case, if there's not the ability to easily access it, generally, most of those companies require a search warrant and/or judicial subpoena to release that footage.
Former Buffalo Police Commissioner Joe Grimalia says in the Nancy Guthrie case, it's not easy to get that footage right away.
Now, what I've been told in some of the circles that I've talked about in this case, that when you don't have a subscription, that footage would auto-delete after a certain short amount of time, but it obviously stays longer with the company itself. So it would have taken a little bit of time for law enforcement to get the proper subpoenas and get them to the manufacturer.
Beyond the search for Guthrie, the release of doorbell camera footage in this case has left the public, well, a bit weirded out. WBEN has more on what people should know about these cameras.
Arun Vishwanath, who is a cybersecurity expert, we're talking about what everybody's been talking about really over the past week, the prevalence of these Ring Nest doorbell cameras and how they're playing into police investigations. Arun, thanks for being with us this morning. I think this week was eye-opening for a lot of people because it started with the Ring Super Bowl commercial about how it will be using AI to scan neighborhoods for dog faces. And now, a couple days later, hearing about the Nest Ring camera, or, well, they're two different companies, the Google Nest camera in this Guthrie investigation where police were able to obtain video from it, even though you might have suspected that it wasn't recording anything. What does all this tell you?
Right. Hey, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Susan. You know, this tells you a lot more now, right? I mean, it tells you how great cameras are as evidence tools, but it also tells you that there's a lot about it that we don't really understand, right? We're collecting a lot more information. And so, you know, there's two separate things going on here, right? So you have a camera, and I'm all for cameras in houses. They're great evidence tools. They're not preventative tools. And Ring, what they're trying to do, which is a completely different company owned by Amazon, is they're trying to sell you on this idea that, hey, you know what? Use our cameras, store your feeds with us, and now we're going to access it.
Arun, I'm wondering from you,
yeah,
why it took 10 days for that video to be released. Did it take that long to find it, or did it take that long to get all sides to agree to release it?
To be very honest, I have no idea what's going on at the law enforcement end. But my understanding, based on what I read, I'm sure what everybody else out there has read as well, is that there wasn't a cloud backup, and they had to go into the hardware to find the footage, which apparently it had. Now, it's a good thing that we have footage, but on the other side of it, what it tells us is cameras are capturing more than organizations really even tell us. So imagine all of that going to the cloud and then a company accessing it with or without your permission, looking for what they say, well, you know, the commercial in the Super Bowl with Ring was about looking for dogs, but it could be anything from a traffic infraction to infidelity, right? Now you're imagine an urban area with thousands of feeds just going around. That's the scary part. I think everybody should have cameras. There's no two ways about it. And cameras don't mean that there are no crimes. Cameras don't stop crimes. They're great evidentiary tools, and everybody should have them. The question is, when we start sharing that footage with the organization that now decides when to access it and how.
If you had one of these cameras, maybe up until this week, you might have thought that if you didn't pay for the subscription, that the footage just wasn't accessible. It just was kind of fleeting. You could see it live, and then after that, nothing saved. But now right. We know that's not the case. Is the lesson here maybe that when you get this camera, when you have this technology, and maybe this goes beyond cameras, maybe this goes for the smart speaker that you talk to and a lot of these other, you know, quote unquote, smart devices, that if you're bringing that into your home, you don't really have control over what happens with the data or whatever it is?
Absolutely. The reality of today's technology is that there's more that can be done with it, even with smart TVs at home, that then people really understand. This is why I always say, you know, buy a product that has, you know, known vulnerabilities or from a company that is pretty well known. In this case, this is a Google product. And yesterday, the Ring CEO came out and immediately said, hey, our products don't do this. You notice they immediately came out and disowned this entire process and said, well, our products don't cache anything at all. So this is a known issue where we have products that do, which store, which listen in, home smart devices at home, every one of these things. So you have to buy it from a reputed person, and you got to make sure that, you know, you put those privacy features into it and lock them down. I'm all for devices that are well manufactured with known vulnerabilities that are, you know, tightly privacy protected because they can, to some extent, protect you and provide great evidence. They're great tools. They're very powerful tools.
Do you think this case kind of sets a precedent for other criminal cases?
I mean, look at it this way, right? Cameras are great evidence tools. I keep saying that, right? We have cameras everywhere. We have it in homes. We have it on our cars. We have it in phones. They don't prevent crimes, though. And what this tells you is, look, a criminal and most criminals will figure out how to evade these. Notice we don't have much of any actionable information coming out of this, right? It's still hard police work. They're going door to door. They're canvassing neighborhoods. They're looking for clues. They're asking people for information. Even with AI, and I have had people ask me about, hey, can AI demask this person? Even AI can't do that. We don't have models that can basically demask a person because, you know, most of the person's face is concealed. We have clues. We can look at clothing. It can tell us about their gait, but it really doesn't do much more than that. My recommendation to everyone is, hey, you know, have cameras and don't have just one, have more than one. Share the app within the family. You know, I have family members who live alone and, you know, I tell them to share the app with us. So at least we know what's going on, right? And pay attention to what that footage is. And this brings that whole argument of, you know, are cameras useful? Absolutely. Do they prevent crimes? No. Should we share all this data with an organization that can do whatever they want with it? Well, the answer is no. It doesn't do anything with that.
Bob Rose on 97.3 The Sky discussed the latest developments in the case Friday.
The bottom line is everybody wants her safe return, and the clock continues to tick. I don't like how long it's been, but here's just a quick update what we have going on. The FBI released a description of the guy that was at the doorbell cam, 5'9 to 5'10, average build. Wearing a black 25-liter Ozark Trail hiker pack, the kind that you get at Walmart. That's their Walmart's house brand, Ozark Trail. The FBI increased the reward to $100,000. The Pima County Sheriff's Department forensic team was searching the brush off of near the home there early Thursday morning. TMZ, the founder Harvey Levin, told Fox News that his organization received another letter from someone claiming to know Nancy Guthrie's alleged kidnapper, who it is. And what do they want? They want a Bitcoin in return. That's valued about $67,000. Yeah, that's what you want in return. And law enforcement, I don't think that they think this guy is anything other than a fraudster. And you'll find out who he is. I guarantee you, you will, and I guarantee you that guy will go to prison. Yeah, they don't. When it gets to the point where it's this a case this big, there anybody who plays that kind of game, you're going to get busted. And you're going to get busted hard. All right. So that's the latest I have on that particular case.
Since they've been some of the most discussed stories of the week, it's not a surprise that there's been a bit of overlap in theories about the Nancy Guthrie mystery and the Jeffrey Epstein saga. Here's KRLD in Dallas to explain.
As all this plays out, the conspiracy theories have already begun. Reddit is just engorged with them.
Okay.
Among them, some people are convinced that the person in that ring video is a woman.
I don't know about that.
Well, the person was wearing a mask, but they say you can tell from her eyes and the shape of her head.
Didn't they have a mustache, though, underneath?
I don't know.
Guess not.
Others are insisting that the ransom notes are all AI deepfakes. Some say it was an inside job designed to cover up an accident, perhaps the accidental death of Nancy Guthrie. And then there's the big media cover-up. You know, we're being dragged into all of this. And finally, you knew there had to be a Jeffrey Epstein angle, and there is. Apparently, Savannah Guthrie did an interview with Epstein 7 years ago, and that somehow ties into all of this, especially since Nancy Guthrie disappeared on the night the Justice Department released the second batch of the Epstein files.
All right. I love the media cover-up, because it's like, have you ever sat in an office with the boss and he said, look, guys, I know what the truth is, but we can't let that out? Have you ever had that?
Never.
After the release of millions of files related to the late financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein at the request of Congress, it seems like the entire internet has been trying to make sense of the often fractured and confusing trove of information about Epstein and his activities, including what was happening on a private island that he owned near the U.S. Virgin Islands. Some of the information in the files is banal. Some of it is disturbing. and much of it links Epstein with rich and powerful people in business, entertainment, and the halls of government. Though Epstein died in prison more than 6 years ago while being held on charges related to the alleged sexual exploitation of underage girls, he landed in the spotlight again this year. That's in part because current President Donald Trump campaigned on a promise to release more information about Epstein. Things went a little sideways last year when Attorney General Pam Bondi and other Trump administration officials said they wouldn't be releasing new files. That led to Congress passing legislation and then the massive file dump. Bondi appeared before Congress this week to discuss the situation, and she made headlines for her combative responses, including calling a lawmaker a, quote, loser lawyer at one point. Out of all of this, one interesting thing about the impact of the Epstein case is that for a brief moment, it united Republicans and Democrats who got together to pass the Epstein Files Transparency Act. This is in an era of pretty severe political polarization in the U.S. United States Representative Bob Onder, a Republican from Missouri, was one of the lawmakers who voted to release the files. He spoke this week with the Mark Cox Morning Show out of 97.1 in St. Louis about the issue.
The Democrats just wanted to go on endlessly about, you know, about Jeffrey Epstein or what have you. You know, and for heaven's sakes, the department has released over 3 million pages of documents, tens of thousands of photos. The Democrats were nitpicking that, you know, some names were some names were not redacted that should be and some were that shouldn't be. The DOJ fixed those problems. So, you know, I think, look, the Justice Department, President Trump, the Republican Congress, we are keeping people safe. The Democrats want to talk about peripheral issues.
Were you able to get into that skiff? I know Thomas Massie went in there and he claimed that there's stuff that we can't talk about, but there's all these other names on there that they need to release. What's he getting at there? Are there names that we need to be seeing in the public?
Yeah, I think there are probably some names of perpetrators that we haven't seen yet. There's this one sheikh who was corresponding with Epstein in a pretty suspicious way. I think that's probably true. And I mean, when you release 3 million pages of records, you're not going to get it all perfect. But I think we'll continue to learn more about the Epstein files and who is all implicated. What was really ironic is that when I, for the last 6 months on the House Judiciary Committee, Democrats wanted to talk about nothing but Epstein. And then the House Oversight Committee subpoenaed the Clintons, and the Clintons resisted the subpoena. And for 2 weeks, we didn't hear a word about Epstein. And then yesterday, we heard about Epstein, or 2 days ago, we heard about Epstein again. So the hypocrisy of the Democrats is overwhelming. Look, we are looking out for the American people.
However, there are Republican voters out there who want to see more action from the government when it comes to the Epstein files. One of those Republicans called in to the Bob Rose Show this week.
Yeah, what's bothering me is I watched the Epstein hearing yesterday with Bondi, and it's not the theatrics and the clown show that was. It's the fact that no one's been arrested. No one's been arrested for that. We're going after the worst of the worst of the illegal criminals. The Epstein clients, that's the worst of the worst of the worst. I want to see these people arrested. I don't care how powerful the name is. They have victimized our own women and children. I want to see these people perp walked. Whole thing could have been erased if there had been arrests made. Trump campaigned on this. I support Trump. I support his administration. But this has got to be fixed. If we let this thing pass, we're going to be a joke in our own country and the rest of the world. I want to see people literally going to Gitmo for this because it's absolutely disgusting. Some of the things that I've read in the files are horrific, Bob. It's horrific. It's beyond the pale. I want to see it done, and I want to see Bondi arresting people now.
I hear you loud and clear. I share the frustration. In a lot of cases, it's that you've still got to prove it. You know, you're still innocent until proven guilty. Certain documents might lend themselves in that direction. I mean, it's pretty clear that this person was dirty. But then you still have the burden of proof. But and I didn't read all this. I haven't seen. There's so much material. You say there's stuff in there that's clearly horrendous. If it connects the dots, then I agree with you even more. Yeah. I'm not putting it all on Bondi, but the buck has to stop with her now. She is in charge. Yes, it should have been dealt with years ago, but, yeah, she's in that seat now. So, yeah, there is a level of frustration there. You know, she's doing battle, and that's great. You know, she gives it back as good as she gets it in these meetings and stuff. But, no, you're right. We're ready. It's got to be action now at this point. So, yeah, hopefully those things are coming. But, again, maybe we shouldn't hold our breath, unfortunately.
Thank you for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KRLD 1080 in Dallas-Fort Worth, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, Chad Hartman out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, WBEN in Buffalo, The Bob Rose Show out of 97.3 The Sky in Central Florida, and The Mark Cox Morning Show out of 97.1 The Talk in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find these true crime roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.